passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
A caller just mentioned, what if Alabama wins the national championship this year? Burton, Jermaine Burton, the wide receiver, would have won a title 2 years ago and would win one this. And has it ever happened? I believe it has. Remember Jay Coker played quarterback to Alabama to a title in 2015. I'm pretty sure he was on the 2013 Florida State national championship team. We continue here, and we'll be joined by Brandon Marcello, who has a lot to offer. Of course, the great writer and columnist joining us to talk about all things college football. Hey, Brandon, thank you very much. I want to give the audience just a slight break for a minute. We've been obsessing about Michigan, and I'll come back to that in a second. But you turned my I about fell over when I read your tweet, I think, the other day about Dan Enos leaving Arkansas. And for those who may have missed it, I want to let you explain the cost of Arkansas hiring Dan Enos and firing him after only 8 games.
Yeah, we've heard about fully guaranteed contracts for head coaches. We've been hearing that a lot. Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M. But do you know coordinators are starting to get that? Well, Dan Enos at Arkansas got that for leaving Maryland. He got a 3-year fully guaranteed contract worth $3.7 million. And as a result of being fired after just 8 games, he gets that entire contract paid out monthly in monthly installments for a total of $3.7 million. So he's getting nearly $4 million for coaching 8 games and picking up 2 wins, including one against an FCS team. Not bad work.
No. So on Sam Pittman, what's ahead for him? And he's already made the sacrificial lamb. That's usually what you do right after the season when the AD walks into your office. What happens now?
He needs to win some games, and they need to show some improvements offensively, obviously. He needs to show a clear vision for what the offense is going to look like in the future. You know, I thought it was a mistake from the get-go in hiring Dan Enos. You're going from a Kendall Bryle system to a more pro-style system where you're upping the verbiage, you're upping the calls, the responsibilities on your quarterback in KJ Jefferson. And you had KJ Jefferson coming back in, which all the Arkansas contingent kept saying, hey, he might be a dark horse Heisman contender. You had Rocket Sanders coming back in the backfield, and yet you're not able to score a touchdown at home against Mississippi State, and you've lost 6 straight games. Absolutely atrocious offense, and Dan Enos, big reason why for that. They've got pieces there to score points and win games, and this offense just was not going to fit from the get-go. You look at Dan Enos's numbers from when he's at Maryland, even beforehand, among the lowest in explosive play rate. Arkansas was among the highest in explosive play rate under Kendall Briles in that veer and shoot system. I never quite understood the day and night change in offensive philosophy for the Razorbacks.
Brandon Marcello with us. Brandon, let's talk a little bit about the SEC. And we know what Alabama has to do, but Georgia is the school that we all gave it to, and now we got our hand trying to take some of that back. Without Bowers, what is the likelihood they get tripped up?
I don't see it. I really don't. I think that they are far and away the best team in the SEC right now. I think their biggest challenge, to be quite honest, is this weekend against Florida. And even that, this is a game they should win by double digits. They should win by 2 touchdowns in Jacksonville. I think the loss of Brock Bowers is not big, other than he's a guy that was just really explosive. I mean, how often do we see tight ends running a jet sweep? The guy is a freak athletically. They've got Oscar Delp there at tight end. He's got a lot of catches already this season. They're going to utilize him in the red zone. They're not going to miss that much as far as their scheme. We're just going to miss out on some of those big explosive plays, 1 or 2 every game from Brock Bowers. But having said that, Georgia should keep rolling through this schedule they've got.
On the other side, we're acting as if the winner of Alabama-LSU will go to Atlanta, and you've already answered the question in one part, because Ole Miss could conceivably run the table and make some noise. But in terms of Alabama and LSU, what are your thoughts on where those teams are as we get ready for that Titanic matchup?
I mean, unless LSU improves things in the secondary, and some of that's been an issue with injuries. And I know they just shut out Army, but it's Army. What you're seeing here are two programs in LSU and Alabama that have had their issues, but seemingly have been able to correct them on the run. They're kind of changing tires as they're driving down the road. Alabama's definitely not what we saw 3 years ago, and for that matter, even last year. But credit to Jalen Milroe for really improving himself, and then and the coaches as well, and providing things that he does very well. This is a guy that can hit the deep ball and everything. In that Tennessee game early, listen, Tennessee can get after the passer. They're one of the best in the country getting after the passer, and you got to get rid of the ball quickly. You know, Florida struggled with that a little bit against Tennessee earlier this season because of that. But Milroe, he can hit those deep balls. And when you do that, that opens so many other things up. Alabama still, I think, has one of the top maybe six or seven defenses. By the end of the season, we'll be talking about that. But LSU, they just don't have the defense, I think, to win a championship and contend. Having said that, they might have the best quarterback in the country right now, Jaden Daniels. He has taken that team and put them on his back. He has been incredible, and I think will be in New York City for the Heisman Trophy ceremony in December.
Brandon, let me get to the Michigan scandal. I mean, there are a lot of people that think this could derail them, and then there are others, and we've talked to a few already today, and we talked to some yesterday who thought it will. Where are you on where this lands?
Well, I think that what's going to happen is they're going to get to the college football playoff again. They're going to win the Big Ten championship again. Their defense is absolutely suffocating. Their offense, they can play almost any style they want. J.J. McCarthy's been getting better game after game after game at quarterback. Sign-stealing or not, this team is ultra-talented. The only other team in the country that's as talented and as deep as them is Georgia. Michigan is built to win a championship. I thought they were built to win a championship last season, but the guys are older now. They're better now. And I don't care if you were to mail the game plan to them and let them know exactly what you're running. You still have to out-talent Michigan, and no one remaining on their schedule is going to be able to do that other than Ohio State maybe contending with them and keeping it close. But that game is in Ann Arbor this season, and Michigan has been absolutely dominating everybody in the trenches. In the last 2 years, that's how they've beaten Ohio State. They have bullied in the trenches. It's not sign stealing that's ended up being the root cause for them beating Ohio State. It's that they're more physical, and they've been more talented up front than the Buckeyes.
Brandon Marcello, many thanks, Brandon. We appreciate your time and your insight. One more thing before we head to the break, and we may be here the rest of the day doing this, but Jeremy Mills, our research guru, said that he found at least one other player who has won national championships at two schools, Darion Kendrick, who was on the Clemson national championship team and also the Georgia team in 21. That's what always happens when you get a trivia question right in the middle of a show and the host has no clue what the answer is. We'll take a short break.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. As we continue here, and we are taking your phone calls. David is in Virginia. Hello, David. David, you there? David in Virginia.
Yes.
Well, go right ahead. Thanks for holding on.
Okay, thank you, Paul. All I wanted to say is, why doesn't the NCAA allow helmet communication between the teams, given the quarterback and helmet that can receive signals, and then one defensive guy receiving signals like the NFL does? That would eliminate
it's a really good question.
Everything.
I think they're going to experiment with it in postseason, but that would eliminate. Instead of worrying about Michigan stealing signals, they should immediately implement that rule, and then Michigan will find out whether this has helped Michigan, how much this has helped Michigan. But
right.
it's a really good idea.
Right. The NFL's had it since 1994.
Right.
30 years.
I don't know why
in
we can't do it in college football.
In 2008, they allowed one defensive player to have a helmet to receive signals. So you got one offensive guy,
yeah,
quarterback, and one defensive guy the DL.
And then Michigan could save a lot of money on not having to send this this retired Marine guy all over the country.
Right, exactly. And I know that the NCAA has experimented with it, and I know they're kind of toothless right now, but they should implement that at every college. You know, before they
It's a very good suggestion, and we'll get some reaction as we. Hey, thank you very much. That was good. Charlie is in Oxford. Hello, Charlie. Didn't hear Charlie. What about Billy calling next? Hello, Billy.
Hey, Paul. I'm not going to ask how you're doing because, you know, unless something's changed in the last 3-4 minutes, I'm going to just hopefully assume everything's going well with you, man. But, I've got a question for you with the Mississippi State going to Auburn. I've got some friends who are, you know, been to Auburn and everything else, and on Facebook and everywhere else, they're talking about, you know, the honeymoon's over. You know, Hugh Freeze.
I mean, honeymoons only normally last about a week anyway, don't they?
Yeah.
mine would have lasted longer, but we simply ran out of money.
Well, I tell you, I one of them was texting me back and forth, and I said, look, State's going to Auburn this weekend. I said, that is y'all's litmus test. You know,
I think you're right, I think Hugh Freeze just needs to turn off his phone and and not listen to all the chatter. However, a loss to Mississippi State at home would make people uncomfortable. In the end, it doesn't matter because this is a transitional year. Auburn fans, I think, were overly juiced up going in thinking that, hey, maybe 7, maybe 8, maybe we beat Alabama, maybe we set the world on fire like Gus Malzahn did. A win over State means you can go to Vanderbilt and win. You got a shot at Arkansas. You got a shot at New Mexico. You will beat New Mexico State. So you could take, conceivably, a 4-game winning streak into Alabama, and suddenly the Iron Bowl becomes pretty relevant.
Yeah, but is Will playing, Paul? Do you know?
He didn't play last week. I'll find out here in a minute. But I know he's pretty banged up.
Well, so what is it? Do you know?
I thought he had the
injury. Why is he not playing? Is it? I heard like his hand hit a helmet, you know, but I've heard other things. You know?
I don't know the specific reason. I just heard he was banged up.
Sure, man. Okay.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Brad is calling from Destin. This guy, longtime coach and an administrative person, maybe he can help us out. Brad, what do you got?
How you doing, buddy?
We're doing great.
I was just going to weigh in a little bit on the stealing the signals and all.
Yes.
I think if memory serves correct, you played Little League Baseball, didn't you, in Memphis?
Well, I was on a team, let me put it that way.
Well, if the, you know, this goes all the way back for years that the third base coach, if he sees the catcher put down a 1, that means a fastball usually. And if he puts down a 2, it's a curveball.
Right.
So, you know, if you're batting and the coach sees it and he says, heads up, Paul, that tells you it's a fastball coming. If it's a heads up, Feinbaum, that means it's a curveball coming. And so, you know, going back and stealing signals has gone on for years. The person that, you know, that is most relevant is the ball boy on the sideline.
Really?
On the opposite sideline is standing right there next to the other coaches. And, you know, there's been signals that have gone on for years and years. If the, you know, if the head coach is, say it's Michigan against Ohio State and Ryan Day is yelling, you know, telling the guy, you know, throw the ball or whatever, and the Michigan ball boy puts the ball in his right arm.
Oh.
They glance over, and that tells them, okay, it's going to be a pass because I just heard him over there say that.
That's interesting.
The Coach Zellenberger
used to. Back in the day when you were a coach, what did you slip the ball boy?
He got to eat extra at the pregame meal. But it was funny with Coach Snellenberger. When I first got to Louisville with him, and some of our checkoffs might be like white 72 stops, and I'm thinking, Coach, we're telling the defense exactly what we're doing. He said they don't know if it's a dummy call or not.
Oh.
You know, so that's the other thing is that if a live color, maybe a live color is green, and whatever follows green is what they're going to run. So if you say green 72, they're going to run the play 72. But if they yell out red 72, that's a dummy call. And
then how do you know the play if they go red 72?
They're going to call the one that was already in the huddle.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The play that was already called.
That'd be a terrible sign stealer.
That's exactly. Well, a real quick story. We were playing Tulsa, and we had our quarterback, you know, he wore his IQ on his back. And so we had to make the signals real simple. And so we ran a pop pass. So it looked like we were popping open a bottle of soft drink. That was the signal. Well, Tulsa picked up on our signal, so they knew we were going to throw a quick pop pass to the tight end. And so when the ball was snapped, they caught it because their defensive coordinator, I worked with him at Alabama. He's one of my best friends. And so they saw the signal for the pop pass. When the ball was snapped, the free safety, the strong safety, both linebackers and a corner, all of them ran straight to the tight end to intercept it. Our quarterback looks up and sees everybody on him, and the wide receiver's wide open down the field because nobody covered him. And so it was sort of overthinking it. I think where they have stepped over the bounds, though, is if somebody was paying the guy to do that, now you're getting in an area that is over the line right there.
Right.
But, you know, you only have a certain length of time to make adjustments. And, you know, it's where the signals, where you can catch the signals is with the defensive backs. It's so loud. They've got to relay a signal to the other, to a cornerback or whatever, if he can't hear it. So maybe the safety, if he pats his helmet, that means we're in man-to-man coverage. Ooh. If he grabs his face mask, we might be in zone coverage. And so, you know, you can see that as
like
a –
more than I want to remember.
But anyway, that's –
That happens here too, Brad, where Randy gives me a signal if it's going to be a good call. I'm waiting for it, Randy.
Anyway, I appreciate it. Maybe that'll help your listeners a little bit.
I look forward to seeing you soon. It's always a pleasure. Thank you very much. Trey is up next.
Hey, Paul, before I get started, I'd like to pray for our troops over there in the Middle East. I see they've been, in the last week, been attacked about 13 times. And our troops are over there of all races and nationality and sexes are over there. They're fighting for our freedom so people like you and I can enjoy this show and enjoy college football. And I think sometimes in the midst of all of what's going over here, we don't realize how important what's going on over in the Middle East is and how it affects us. So I'd like to send some prayers out to our military over there, Paul. But, you know, so much for Jim taking G's advice and not letting anybody steal his peace. And am I right? I mean, he named about five people that's stealing his peace.
Well, yeah, he went right down the list.
Oh, yes, sir. And then J.K., he just gave me even more confidence about Alabama beating LSU. I mean, he called the beginning of the year, they're going to lose four games. Milton can't throw the ball, losing to Ole Miss, losing to Texas A&M, and losing to Tennessee. So I want J.K. to keep calling in and saying all that kind of stuff. But, Paul, my question to you is about Auburn. What has happened to Auburn? I've never seen an offense over there so inept and the quarterback position so bad. Did Brian Harsin lead that program in such a mess? And did he do it on purpose after what they tried to do to him and what they accused him of? Or
no, I will say this about Brian Harsin, and I don't claim to know him that well, but I did know him and talk to him occasionally, and he didn't do anything on purpose. The guy was trying to win. He was just completely out of his comfort level. And, you know, he also, you
know, so was recruiting just that bad
him,
over there?
Really strike back, even at the people who tried to get him fired for a trumped up charge after the first season.
Well, is it recruiting? I mean, this is one of the worst Auburn teams I've seen in a long time.
I'll put it in simple terms. You understand this. He didn't understand SEC recruiting.
Okay.
You can interpret that any way you want.
Well, I don't like to see Auburn as down as they are.
Well,
they'll
be
other
back. Hugh's out there landing five stars left and right, but Harsin tried to recruit to what he thought would work in his system.
Fit.
And he turned off a lot of coaches, and he also understood the South very well. And
well, these Auburn fans need to be patient with you, because I think he's going to turn that program around, and you went over their schedule. I don't think they would have been favored to win any of the games that they have lost so far in the SEC. And one other thing, Paul, LSU, if they beat Alabama, they still have to beat Texas A&M in Florida for them to get to the SEC championship game.
Those
it's not an automatic,
home,
but yes, sir, it is. But anyway, thank you for taking my call, and you have a great day.
Thank you. We will take a break. Matt Stinchcomb joins the show right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. Matt Stinchcomb joining us. I've seen Missouri last week. I want to talk about them because suddenly,
man,
a lot of conversation about Mizzou.
Yeah, you know, we talked about them a couple of weeks ago. I was saying how they might be one of the most balanced offenses in the conference. And that was after, what, week two or three, I want to say, we were out there. And saw them beat Kansas State, kind of tied at the end, and they hit the field goal. And, you know, despite their best efforts, hit the field goal. And then ever since then, that was like the launching pad for those guys. And they've built on that. Now you're in the bye week. There's a chance that they'll be even better coming out of the bye week, because I think they'll be able to move some pieces along their offensive front, specifically at guard, at right guard. They tried to make a change at Kansas State, and it didn't stick because they got an injury there and it had to, you know, turn back into the way they started the season lineup-wise. But this is a team that can run the football. They've got a tailback that he just gains yards. Cody Schrader, nobody's going to sit back and be like, whoa, game breaker. But all he does is gain 2 or 3 yards every time he touches it. He just falls forward. And then Brady Cook, as a runner, second maybe only to, you know, Jaden Daniels, Jalen Milroe, okay. But from a balance standpoint, I put Brady Cook up there with anybody. And then you got those two guys out wide. They've shocked me. I didn't think anything about this team coming into the season. I think most didn't. And that Kansas State game, I think, was a turning point for them. And they have done nothing but run with it. Now, the meat of their schedule is still in front of them, right? I mean, they've got – and it starts, you know, after this week, regardless of the outcome of what happens in Jacksonville – then you got to go to Athens, right? Then you've got Florida and Tennessee waiting on you still. It only gets tougher. And, you know, they lost to LSU at home, gave them all they wanted, but they lost. So you're hard-pressed to point to. Here's the signature victory at K-State, I guess. But they're a much better football team. I think that's the best matchup. You know, you push through this week, and if you're looking at the remaining schedule in the East, that's the game. You know, to me, it's the Georgia Missouri game. It potentially could be, you know, depending on what happens on this Saturday, it could break differently. But
what do you see with Tennessee coming out of Tuscaloosa before Kentucky? Because they have a tough schedule too.
They do, and you know, Kentucky could be healthier. They were getting healthier. That is kind of similar to what I was just talking about with Missouri, where Kenneth Horsey finally gets to play. That solidifies that offensive front. They've kind of jockeyed some guys around, swapping Eli Cox around, he and Jagger Burton. So, but then they get injured at right guard. You know, they were down a safety and one of their best players at linebacker versus Mizzou. All those guys, other than maybe the Geiger kid at safety, are back. So there's a chance that Kentucky is a much stronger football team coming out of the bye week. They got to get healthy at receiver. You know, Barrion Brown's been nicked up, as has been Robertson. So they got to get those guys back in the lineup. But I just keep waiting for Kentucky to put it together offensively, and they just haven't done it. They had that one outlier game, right, versus Florida, where, you know, it was the Ray Davis show, 280 yards on the ground, and Florida just didn't want to tackle that day. Literally had defenders in place and didn't tackle. But you haven't seen I haven't seen a good game from that Kentucky offense, including that one, really, because you're sitting there going, there was a drop pick six. I mean, there was the passing game for Kentucky just hasn't been anything like we expected. If they figured out late in the season, coming out of a bye week, and you're healthy, you know, then, you know, maybe Tennessee has more difficulty at the start of the meat of their back end of the schedule too.
Let's talk about the Florida part of the Georgia game, because everybody, I think, by now has heard us talk about Georgia.
Has Georgia gotten enough coverage? Hey, did you hear Brock Bowers is injured?
I was going to ask you that next week.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah. We'll get to that.
Or the week after, whenever he comes back.
Yeah.
Because he can't do anything right now.
No.
It didn't get better. But what do the Gators look like when they match up with Florida?
There's a couple of things I think that Florida has the capability of doing that we saw glimpses of, really starting with the South Carolina game, because we saw them back-to-back weeks, then they went into the bye. And, you know, they were getting a lot of flack about not pushing the ball downfield. And then you watch the plays and you're going, well, they could have here, but Mertz actually makes the right decision and, you know, throws it underneath or checks it down. And then in South Carolina, they hit a few. They hit a couple versus Vanderbilt. And then they start pushing the ball downfield further versus South Carolina. You know, a lot of teams have thrown on South Carolina. A lot of teams likely will be able to continue to throw on South Carolina. Injuries in the secondary, youth, et cetera. That said, Trevor, you know, Etienne is healthy. And Montrell Johnson is more than serviceable at running back. If they can have similar success to, or anything approximating that, to what they had versus Tennessee, which was another I don't want to tackle type of performance, then, you know, you're talking about a potentially dangerous offense, given the way Mertz is, he's making good decisions, he's incredibly efficient. You talk to all the coaches and they're like, watch this guy. The ball goes where it's supposed to go. And he's smart. He's not trying to force it in bad spots. The challenge is for Florida is that this Georgia defense is really good at forcing third and long. They're really good at getting off the field, three and out, as good as a turnover just about. So from a field position standpoint, it's a major issue. So they got to find a way to try to flip the field and play on some short fields. They're not a great takeaway defense, or they haven't been. And they don't generate a ton of negative yards defensively. So the question will become, can you win the field position battle and capitalize early? They got to be better in the red zone. But I think they're going to have to win downfield, and they're going to have to be able to run to be able to protect long enough to get downfield. That's, you watch them, and they'll try to protect with seven. You'll rush five. You'll rush six. You should have at least one that's floating, and there's a double team in there somewhere. Guy will break free. And you're sitting there going, this is just, you can't do anything more scheme-wise than what they have done, and you hope that they hold up. They haven't been healthy. Florida hasn't. You know, they hadn't had their starting center for a couple weeks. So there's a chance they come out of the bye healthier. So maybe that gives them a chance to push the ball downfield a little bit better, something reminiscent to what we saw versus South Carolina.
It's very cliche to say, oh, Bowers. And we know the narrative, but how does Georgia make up for that?
Yeah, the ball is going to have to go some other places now, and especially when you think about, security blanket's not the right word, because it's almost like, all right, fine, everything else is not available, so let's just throw it to the sure thing. No, you want to get it to him either way. So he's a security blanket that's also, you know, setting the world on fire. But now those 15 touches that you would want to go to him, they got to go somewhere else. And this is a scenario where the really good teams, they shouldn't, you're not reliant on a player anyway. And Kirby Smart said this a couple of weeks ago when we had them. Who's the best? We asked, you know, who's the best college football player? And he said, well, you know, it's hard to answer that when you don't always have the ball in your hand. And so what he was leaning, and what he ultimately said is, you typically say quarterbacks. Quarterbacks can impact the game more than any other position. And Bowers plays a position where you have to get the ball to him. So now, because you have that opportunity, it's not like you've lost your quarterback. You did lose your top target in the receiving game and a guy that needed to get touches even in the run game, and typically did. So where do those touches go? Well, they had one of their better rushing performances, albeit versus Vanderbilt, a better rushing performance. Florida, as we've seen, has had difficulty in the ground game. And depending on how healthy Georgia is going into this one, maybe that complements it. So some of those 15 touches goes to the run game, the true run game, not the run extension game where you throw it out to the perimeter. You're handing it, you're tossing it. Then the others are, how healthy is Ladd McConkey? He's been really abbreviated all season long, but they've been able to play him that way. Maybe that changes this week. Dom Lovett, when he came over from Missouri, he would have been, who knows what we're talking about with Missouri if Dominic Lovett is still in that lineup. He was probably going to be their number one receiver. Instead, it's Luther Burden and Theo Weiss, and they're doing fine without him. But Dom Lovett, he's abbreviated because why? There's one football. So I think he figures more prominently. I mean, Marcus Roseme Jack Saint is a guy that might be the best blocking receiver in the conference. They use him a ton. He'll block linebackers, defensive ends, corners, safeties. God bless them if they have number one on them because he finishes guys to the ground. But it's not like he's some lousy receiver that doesn't have trust or banked reps with Carson Beck. So I'm saying all that to say it's not like they don't have anywhere to go. Now the question is how well do they perform when those fourth quarter versus Auburn moments emerge? Is there enough trust and is there enough, you know, response from these other players to step up and make the plays that you know 19 would have?
Great stuff from Matt. We always enjoy seeing.
I filibustered my way through that last one.
I think the cloture votes.
World class.
The cloture votes coming up on the Senate floor in 5 minutes. Senator Stinchcomb. Mm. We'll take a short break.
Never.
We're back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And John is up next in St. Louis. So hello, John.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing today, sir?
Everything's great, John. Thank you for asking.
Anyway, I was going to just make an opinionated statement here about this entire fiasco, quite frankly, going on with the Michigan football program. I mean, let's talk business, Paul. Okay, let's talk business. I mean, the bottom line is the NCAA is going to do their due diligence and do some type of quote-unquote investigation. And you know what's going to happen? Absolutely nothing. This is part of a bigger, bigger issue that is part of the entire, you know, NCAA programs, if you will. I mean, this is part of what Bernie Sanders called about a rigged system, and President Trump talked about a rigged system. This epitomizes it. And there's nothing going to be done here. They're going to find some people and put down some sanctions. But you know what? Michigan is going to be in the championship football game against somebody like Ohio State or Florida State. And that's what it's all about. It's all about big money. It's a big sellout, Paul, and you know it. And ESPN and your station.
Hold on a second, John. I don't know that.
Well, you know it. You're all part of it, Paul.
No, we're not. I mean, this is not some conspiracy. This is a school.
Absolutely it's a conspiracy.
Oh, it
absolutely.
Is? Can you tell me who the conspirators are?
The big money in New York City, Paul. Who owns ESPN? Who owns the SEC?
The people that own ESPN are headquartered in Burbank, California.
Like
it's called the Walt Disney Company, Mickey Mouse, MICKEY. You've heard of them, haven't you?
Well, I did as a kid, but, you know, I think of Mickey Mouse, I think of Rowan and Martin and laughing, and that's what your show is all about, sir. Good night.
Good night. Wow. Big pharma, big tobacco, and now big money destroying college football.
Big Mickey.
Even though this is the most successful season so far in terms of people that turn on their televisions every Saturday and watch. John was blaming me personally, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I'm part of this cabal. And what are we gaining out of this, by the way?
Conspiracy.
It's a conspiracy to do what?
I have no idea.
I mean, does it? I don't care if Michigan cheats or not. Do you?
No.
I don't care if they steal the signs. You still have to stop the other team, and they couldn't stop TCU last year. They couldn't stop Georgia the year before. How much did the signals help them in that game? They lost by 30 points. Taz is up next in South Carolina.
Hey, Paul, it's Taz.
Hey, Taz.
Hey, I love your show, and thank you for letting me follow John. I'm going to sound like a Nobel Prize laureate on this Michigan issue thanks to his call.
You're heading to Oslo right now.
Okay. Hey, there's no doubt, if you watch this video that's on Twitter, it's just a little short Twitter video from Ohio State game last year. The offense is putting in the play on the Ohio State side, and the video shows the Stallion guy, Connor Stallion, standing right beside the Michigan defensive coordinator. That's how important he was to what was going on. And as soon, and this is the funny thing about it, he reads the play call faster than the quarterback does for OSU. He's already indicating it's a pass play while the OSU quarterback's still looking at the sideline. But not just he was in on it. All the players start jumping up in there to indicate it's a pass play. They point up. And in the video, you'll see him. He's pointing up. Other personnel, you know, in Michigan clothes are pointing up. But a bunch of players, everybody can tell everybody knew what was going on, and they're all in on it. Now, one of the things that the guy just mentioned, you know, the Giant guy just mentioned, you know, about what's going to happen. Well, here's the thing. You know, what to do? Well, I wouldn't, you know, and I agree with you, the NCAA is dysfunctional. But there is a way to move forward immediately. There's, you know, the way I look at it, it's a player safety issue.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.